Go back into session then?
Yes, we should be ready.
Okay, we're back in session. We're back from recess. So folks watching, we are having some substantial problems with the closed captioning system, And we'll be posting a message for people using the captioning system to let them know that the captioning system will not be functioning for the rest of the meeting, but because we have people here ready to provide testimony, we're going to go forward with the meeting, and all rebroadcasts of this council session will include the captioning, and we apologize to everybody who's inconvenienced by this. And for rebroadcast times, we'll post those on the mayor's website. Why don't we just leave this up for a minute so people can read it? There's a typo.
So, thank you, Mayor.
It's all right.
Gets the gist.
Oh, yeah, we have a couple.
It's all right.
It's not bad.
Thank you. I've been typing since.
It's not bad.
Well, you were standing up. Which is also making it more difficult. Mm-hmm.
Performance anxiety of typing.
Yeah, as well.
All right, that's probably sufficient. Why don't we go ahead and continue from where we left off?
Go back to, okay. So thank you. Given needs in East Portland, as well as the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts, we recommend reserving 2,500 acres for new and expanded tax increment finance districts in these areas of Portland to provide these underserved parts of Portland with the time and space to discuss their priorities and a potential expanded use of tax increment finance. When debt in the Airport Way District is paid off in June of 2020, however, it will free up nearly 890 acres for expanded or new tax increment finance district, including acreage of a potential Southwest Corridor district. This timing would allow a TIF district to be in place well in advance of a new transit project. So we're happy to answer more questions about this and other funding tools and appreciate the opportunity.
Commissioner Fish.
Kimberly, thank you very much. One question, would you remind us under the new, it's been a while since we created a new urban renewal district.
Yes.
Under the new rules that have been worked out, what approval do we need to obtain in order to launch a new urban renewal district?
Thank you, Commissioner. So under the new, under regulation today, we need an affirmative vote of City Council. It would go in front of our board for recommendation, in front of the Prosper Portland board, go to City Council for a vote. We have a consult and confer recommendation, so we would go in front of Multnomah County and send information to other jurisdictions, Portland Public Schools and others, to alert them and be providing them with information, but my understanding is that it is still the case that City Council is the sole body that votes.
Thank you very much.
So going through your math, which I guess that was like 20 minutes ago now, so I kind of forgot it, but
sure.
You were showing the revenue to be raised from urban renewal.
Mm-hmm.
And
and
something like 10% of the portion that would go to Prosper would be available for the local match, which I think is about $12 million of and our local match, I believe, is in the $80 to $90 million range. So I'm curious where, am I right in what I just said, first of all, I guess?
So I was suggesting that if we put 10%, Commissioner, into 10% of the entire urban renewal area, which is similar to what we allocated within the Milwaukee Light Rail Orange Line, about 10% of the district, that would be about $12 million. So if it were 20% of the district, then that would be $24 million or so. I just wanted to give an example of the range of resources that would be available for the local match.
And I guess, and I've told you this before, that seems like a low range, given there's a need for $80 to $90 million. Hasn't the city always relied on urban renewal for its share of local match, or am I wrong about that?
It has. So the Interstate Urban Renewal Area, for example, has a maximum indebtedness of approximately $300 million. City Council allocated about $30 million from that, so about 10% of the overall urban renewal area to the light rail line. I could go through other examples, but I think it's been an important portion of it. Part of the reason we wanted to be clear about the acreage that's available and the anticipated revenue that could be generated is because it is lower, and maximum indebtedness would be lower in this district than it has been in other areas. And that's partly because of the way that the tool works after Measure 5. And it's also because of revenue sharing, but it's also because in a neighborhood that doesn't have a significant amount of high density buildings and where there's not a lot of undeveloped parcels that could be redeveloped for higher purposes, we don't anticipate that there will be a significant level of property tax increase, although we are counting on at least 3% annually.
Mm-hmm. And the $30 million that was available for Interstate, mm-hmm. The Interstate line from Interstate Renewal, was that the entirety of the local match, or did the City Council come up with other sources?
City Council came up with other sources, but I'm going to defer. I'm like looking for Teresa, who can talk about where the rest of the resources came from.
I guess just the point I'm trying to make is it seems like the amount amount being relied upon mm-hmm. from urban renewal for the local match is low.
Yeah,
and that's going to leave. I mean, it's not my problem. It's going to be my colleague's problem to come up with that match, but it does seem that that is low. And, we need the project to happen for all these other good things to happen, too, all the housing opportunities and everything else to arise. We need the light rail project to be paid for, too. So.
Yeah, understood. I think we have, as Bureau Directors, been holding conversations around the different tools that could be put to bear in addition to tax increment finance. There were a lot of creative resources that were brought to bear for the city's local match on the Orange Line. Mm-hmm. So there was a local improvement district and other types of things that PBOC can speak to, mm-hmm. Because in that case as well, there was only $10 million of tax increment finance resources that were applied. Okay. But I understand completely what you're saying.
Okay.
So BPS's role in implementation, I'll speak to both land use and the work we're doing to talk about the publicly owned land that already exists along the corridor. With the help of Metro and their 2040 grant program, BPS is gearing up to lead some station area planning, really a new neighborhood plan for the West Portland Town Center, around the Barber Transit Center and Crossroads, and that's going to begin this year. We're also doing work in South Portland near the Gibbs Station to fine-tune zoning in that area. So it's important to not only talk about the affordable housing, but also the market rate targets we have and the growth management aspect of this. On the publicly owned properties, we've identified a number of them that already are in public ownership that could have a potential for redevelopment on the line, and we're exploring scenarios on those sites. One, the Ross Island Bridgehead, we understand that both the City of Portland and ODOT jointly own some land that is under that current highway infrastructure. If the highway was removed, that potentially frees up several acres of land that could be used for redevelopment, which could support 300 to 450 housing units in that area.
Under the Ross Island Bridge?
Not under the bridge, under the current ramps that connect it to NATO Parkway through the Bridgehead Project. There's several blocks. Also at the Barber Transit Center, if the Transit Center has a light rail station that causes redevelopment of that site, there's the potential, if we went vertical with that, to put a couple hundred additional units there. Portland Community College is interested in development of affordable housing on the Sylvania campus, a short walk from the 53rd Avenue station. The transit improvements make it possible for them to consider reallocating land from parking into more intensive uses. So that's an opportunity. And I understand Tigard staff will also talk about potential opportunities in Tigard as well. In particular, the Tigard Transit Center is a TriMet property, I believe. You spoke earlier, and there were some questions earlier about the working group that Ryan spoke of. And what we're trying to do there is we've learned through the research into best practices on this that other cities in this situation have been successful putting together a collaborative group that includes stakeholders like those who spoke to you earlier, as well as governments and private philanthropy, and organizing that group of people into a more formal entity to shadow the development of the light rail and not only do outreach, continue doing outreach to the community and doing that deeper implementation directly with the community, but also using that as a platform to raise money and marshal private resources. That's been an approach that's worked, I believe, successfully in both Denver and Minneapolis, for example. And so we're trying to learn lessons from some of our peer cities and do more to encourage that kind of private sector and philanthropy collaboration with the city on this line. And that's partly why we're trying to seek, Ryan described it as seed money, to continue this group discussion going and grow that beyond where we've been so far and get it involved in implementation so that there's a partner to the city's efforts here and to the efforts of TriMet and Metro so that we can all continue to sit at the table and work those issues through. So the what was referred to before is we do have some committed money from an existing Metro grant that we're going to put into that, and then we have put in a fall budget adjustment request of $50,000 to support that. So that's what that was about.
I'll say that's actually a nice segue to the next presenters are going to be Metro, TriMet, and Tigard. And Metro is hosting the Equitable Development Strategy process over the next year. And they have a much broader table they'll describe. But our hope is that this seed money for a community preservation work group allows the community-based organizations to maintain a presence. And then the bigger discussion of a bigger, kind of more collaborative table is answered through the SWEDS process. So that's kind of the back and forth that Portland and Metro have had. And our emphasis has been really supporting those community-based organizations.
So is that where my questions about commercial are going to be answered?
Yes, yes, okay. They're coming up now.
I'll keep waiting.
Thank you.
So joining us is Sean Farley from the city of Tigard, Malou Wilkerson from Metro, and Dave Unsworth from TriMet. And I want to thank Sean and Kenny Asher, the Director of Community Development, and the whole the Tigard Council, just for their partnership and their champion of this work. They've been incredible to work with, and I just wanted to be sure to thank them for that partnership. I'm glad this wasn't just a Portland thing or just a Tigard thing.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Sean Farley with the City of Tigard, and City of Tigard has really appreciated partnering with the City of Portland and other regional and community partners on developing this coordinated strategy for the entire Southwest Corridor. Tigard's facing the same housing pressures as Portland, and we need to take action so people can afford to continue living in their communities, especially if we make this major light rail investment. The Tigard City Council acknowledged the strategy in July as a toolbox of potential tools to address the need for more affordable housing. Even before the strategy was complete, Tigard has been taking action. 2017, Tigard voters approved an urban renewal district, and Tigard voters have to approve it. The Tigard Triangle, which is planned to have two Southwest Corridor light rail stations. Our first allocation of TIF money in that district was to support a affordable housing, community partner for affordable housing project that Rachel mentioned earlier that should be breaking ground in a few months. Also in this area known as the Tigard Triangle, we've done a rezone with very streamlined development code. Actually, no parking minimums are required in this area. We're also kicking off a Metro-funded project to figure out how we can implement this urban renewal district in an equitable manner. Other things, as was mentioned earlier, in March, our City Council approved a local SDC exemption for regulated affordable housing for 80% AMI and below. So it is going on in Washington County. And we're also in the process of developing a code update to address the need for missing middle housing, which City of Portland is also working on. So we're really excited to continue working with our regional partners. Tigard will also be a signatory to this MOU with TriMet. Hope to get that signed soon and agreed to. And we also want to continue participating in a community-centered coalition to implement the strategy.
Mr. Farrelly, can I just ask you a question since you've been kind enough to join us today and be patient? Would you remind us, what's the population of Tigard?
It's just over 50,000.
And your city charter requires a vote of the people, not a vote of the council, for creating an urban renewal district?
That's correct.
And what do you estimate is the need in the city of Tigard for affordable housing defined as below 80% of AMI?
Well, the strategy, we have a goal of 600 to 800 units, but the need is higher than that, we realize. So our goal is to get 600 to 800 units built in the next 10 years, but the need is greater than that.
And to what extent is a shortage of buildable land one of your challenges?
It is a major challenge. We're looking at redevelopment. The Tigard Triangle area is somewhat underdeveloped. There's different areas of it, but there is potential there for redevelopment. We don't have very much vacant land whatsoever. One of our last pieces of vacant land is actually under construction to build 240 units of affordable housing in partnership with Washington County Housing Department.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Good afternoon. I'm Malu Wilkinson from Metro, and I'm just going to quickly go over kind of what our role has been in this project. I'm not going to talk about the light rail project because you will hear about that next week. But at Metro, our focus has really been on leveraging and aligning the investments that we and you and other partners make to support our shared goals and get us towards our vision, our 2040 vision of great places across the region for all types of people to be able to live in and enjoy. And so we also acknowledge that any major public investment can bring change, and some of that change is welcome to some people, and some of the change is not welcome and is challenging. And so that's why, one of the reasons why we applied for a grant from the Federal Transit Administration a couple of years ago for equitable development. And we wanted to be sure that we could pair that work on equitable development with continued study of the Southwest Corridor Light Rail project. And that was also why we were glad that we had the money to be able to provide to Portland and to Tigard for this equitable housing work. So we know that you need to take a complete look, and investing anywhere causes changes, and we want to be sure that we are able to help all people take advantage of those changes. So the overall Southwest Corridor Equitable Development Strategy, as Ryan has implied, it includes actions to support housing choices, which really Portland and Tigard have taken the lead on defining what that looks like. And what we've also been focusing on is job creation, small business growth and support, and workforce development. And our goal is that we can prepare communities for the changes and opportunities that light rail investment can bring to the Southwest Corridor through a community-driven process that's really bringing community members into the decision-making process. This is an approach that we've been really trying to implement at Metro. The PAL Division Steering Committee was one of our first examples of really bringing community members into the decision-making process, and the Equitable Development Strategy is another way that we are working hard to do that. So we have the Equitable Development Strategy will be defined by next summer. We're working right now very hard to figure out how it can be implemented together and keep the group that we have that Ryan's talked about at the table into the future, so that you keep those voices together with the agencies figuring out how we can create the places that we want in the Southwest Corridor. We also have we've allocated about $275,000 of our grant from the Federal Transit Administration for early implementation projects. We're calling them pilot projects. Two of them are focused on business and workforce development. Three of them are housing, and one of them is to continue the type of work that you heard Pam talk about in terms of bringing new groups to the table and helping them learn how to be involved effectively in our processes. So those pilot projects are going on right now, and we're excited about them. And we'll be able to tell you, they're in the middle right now. We'll be able to tell you more about them in another few months. The other way that we are hoping that we'll be continuing to play a role in housing and equitable development is through our transit-oriented development program that we have at Metro, where we invest in housing and multifamily development across the region in places that are transit supportive, and we're hoping to have an active role in securing land around future light rail stations in the Southwest Corridor. We also are hoping to be able to expand our role in housing if the voters approve a regional housing bond next month. If it passes, we'll really be working hard with our local partners to invest in their housing priorities, and one of those is the Southwest Corridor Equitable Housing Strategy that is in front of you today. And I guess really the last thing that I want to say is that we can't do any of this as one agency alone. It really takes us working collaboratively together to be successful. Because we bring different perspectives, we're able to bring different voices and different tools to the table. And we really appreciate and commend the work that your staff, especially Ryan, have done over the last couple of years in getting this equitable housing strategy in front of you today, and we're excited to keep working together in the future.
Thank you.
I'm Dave Unsworth, work at TriMet. Thanks for having us here today. I think I would kind of riff off what Malou was saying. We recognize that affordable housing is both a city and a regional-wide priority. We need to work creatively and aggressively to address that, and TriMet is leaning into that hard, and we're willing to move forward with that. And we show that through a couple different methods. One is the Memorandum of Agreement on Affordable Housing. So as TriMet purchases property for the project, where we have to stage property, when we're done with the project, we look to dispose of that property. And so through the agreement that we've reached with the City of Portland in principle, and it's an agreement that we have both with City of Portland, Metro, Washington County, and Tigard to do affordable housing on remnant parcels that are left over by the project. And this essentially outlines what Shannon talked about before. We're committing up to 600 to 700, locating and identifying 600 to 700 locations for 600 to 700 affordable housing units along the alignment. We're looking to write down the value of that to the degree that we are allowed to by law, federal law, returning that federal share back to FTA, who's the principal funder of it. I think we're really excited for that, and I'm hopeful, along with Shannon, that we will have this executed next week. We had a meeting with the City of Tigard and Washington County on that earlier this morning. TriMet's already doing this. So we are on property that we own. We are partnering with the City of Portland, nonprofits in Clackamas County, 495 units that were currently under development on TriMet property. So this is extending what we're doing now to what we will be doing hopefully in the future when we build the Southwest Corridor line. And I think that also builds on our low-income transit, our low-income fare. So getting people to and from work in a more effective way really improves both that access and where people can live. So TriMet really feels like it's part of the solution. TriMet in this region, Portland has been one of the showcases around the country and internationally of how you build light rail. I think this is the next new model of how you build light rail with affordable housing at the same time.
Thank you, all three of you. And we appreciate your being here. We appreciate your patience. Commissioner Fritz, did you have a question? Very good.
Yeah, so when can I see the strategy on preserving affordable commercial?
We will have an equitable development strategy by next summer. And so we'll have pieces of it along the way. And what we can do is we can work with your staff to get you information on the equitable development strategy that's kind of on its way sooner, if that would be useful for you.
I think it's a piece that needs to come with. And by the way, thank you, TriMet, for your partnership on this, and also the City of Tigard and indeed Metro. It's really great that you're we're all working together in a much more focused way than perhaps we have in previous times. But that is the other piece, I think, particularly since, unbeknownst, well, I hadn't realized that the city's rezoning doesn't require commercial in any zone. So I'm very concerned that if we have too much, if we have a only focus on affordable housing, we end up making that less livable because we don't have the services that go with it or the jobs that go with businesses.
So if I can just take a minute to talk to you about one of the pilot projects is with Mercy Corps Northwest. And they have a program that they're actively working on in Seattle. It's been in place for a while, but they haven't had it in the Portland region. And what their pilot project is focusing the Southwest Corridor, working with small business owners, particularly small business owners who are disadvantaged in some way, working with them in both developing business plans to be able to weather changes in the community and grow their businesses. And they also have a matching fund to match their savings so that they're able to invest in their small business locally. And so that's just one of the examples of the types of tools that we're looking at having in place in the Southwest Corridor.
So are you envisioning having a committee of local business owners?
We would love to see that happen, and that is another little component of the pilot project that Mercy Corps Northwest is working on.
And I'd be happy to work with you with some suggestions on that, because we have some thriving small businesses now that don't really need any assistance for investments, or they just need to not be disrupted and displaced. So similar to, in some ways, to the housing. So, yes, if you could please make sure you engage me in my office, I'd really appreciate that.
Here.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fish.
You know, it reminds me that we have a partner in Venture Portland that represents all of our neighborhood business districts. So they may be the perfect complement to what you're trying to do here in terms of matching you with businesses in the area. You mentioned Mercy Corps. Mercy Corps, though, has piloted a project locally where they allow people in areas that are changing quickly, rapidly, to acquire an ownership interest in commercial real estate. And it's like a REIT, but it's not really a REIT, and it's above my pay grade in terms of being able to do it. I think John Haynes is the only person that can actually explain it. But they've acquired properties in East Portland, and I hope that part of this affordable commercial space strategy looks for opportunities for Mercy Corps in concert with local residents to acquire an ownership stake in some of the mixed-use development, because that I think is the marriage of both a good idea and an opportunity.
Commissioner Fish, it's the Community Investment Trust that Mercy Corps has in East Portland, and they are looking at how that could potentially work in the Southwest Corridor, and they are also partnering with Venture Portland. So I think we have a lot of those pieces coming together, and we don't have a full presentation on it right now to talk to you about, but it's very exciting.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you
very much. And Ryan, I know you're going to give us a little bit of a primer on what we're voting for before we go to public testimony, but I thought given the testimony we just had, this would be the appropriate place for me to read the statement from Commissioner Udaly, who wanted to be here today but could not, so she asked if I'd read the statement on her behalf. With the Southwest Corridor project, Portland has the opportunity to deliver high-capacity transit service and safety improvements to one of the most congested parts of our city. In doing so, we can make major strides in achieving our climate goals and provide real transportation access to jobs and opportunity for all Portlanders. It's not often that we get to make such transformative investments, and this is truly exciting. At the same time, we need to make sure that these investments meet the needs of households of all sizes and incomes, that it does not displace existing communities, and that the benefits accrue to the people who need them the most. We know that the housing and transportation constitute the majority of average household costs. Improved transportation service is only effective if the benefits are not offset by rising housing costs. That's why it's so important that we have developed the equitable housing strategy, and why we need to make sure that we deliver on it. Before adopting the locally preferred alternative, we need to be certain that the affordable housing is guaranteed as part of this project. As Transportation Commissioner, I've directed PBOT to complete a signed MOU with TriMet ahead of next week's vote that commits the parties to the acquisition and development of property expressly for affordable housing along the proposed Southwest Corridor light rail line. And again, that is from Commissioner Hugh Daly.
All right. Thank you for our jurisdictional partners for coming today. Greatly appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
So before you is a resolution. It adopts the housing strategy as binding city policy. It directs city bureaus to work with community-based organizations to report to city council before each budget cycle on the progress and the near-term priorities. It directs city bureaus to bring a financing plan back to city council. It directs BPS to conduct station area planning. And it also directs all bureaus working with Metro to advance racial equity through the Southwest Equitable Development Strategy and through deployment of a regional bond, should it pass. And so that's the resolution before you. I also want to note that the Planning and Sustainability Commission has been very active in this project, both on housing and light rail, and have put forth letters on both projects. And Andre Baugh is also here to read that letter to you as normal protocol for a bureau planning practice. So is there time for that to open up for public testimony?
Yeah, why don't we start with that, please?
Okay,
thanks, Dan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We'll start with this gentleman, and then we'll call them in order.
Andre, if you actually testify one more time this week, you get a special prize.
I am done probably for the year, hopefully. Andre Bob, Planning and Sustainability Commissioner. The Planning and Sustainability Commission expresses our cautious optimism and support for the proposed Southwest Corridor strategy, and I'll talk to you about a little bit of our hesitancy why that is. The strategy is well researched and designed to address the near-term housing crisis and the long-term housing needs in the corridor in terms of prevention of displacement and gentrification of low income and people of color. It addresses the needs of the vulnerable. It involves those people in their community. And as has been said earlier today, we must not repeat mistakes of the past, and we need our political leaders to champion this work. And really, I think some of the requests that are being made are about having champions from the community be in the process all the way through. And this is a powerful statement that the letter has. If the city council is not prepared to capitalize its portion of the housing strategy, then we ask that you not adopt the housing strategy. And what that would mean is you not build the project. Really, don't promise and not deliver. And I'll get to why we're saying that. First, we're asking you to make the investment to the investment fund CBO's request to form the community preservation group to make that funding, to make an ongoing annual investment above the current levels into the anti-displacement services, make a one-time multi-million-dollar investment into the general funds of an apartment building acquisition fund. These are all things that are in the plan. Form a Southwest Corridor urban renewal area with strong guardrails against funds being used for anything other than affordable housing until the housing strategy has been fully implemented and the targets met, and follow through on developing proposals and funding for new tenant protections. The reason that we were skeptical, we endorsed the housing strategy, but we're skeptical is history around TIFs are, and Dan Saltzman was pointing to it a little bit in his questions, TIFs have been primarily the basis for the city's match. And if you look historically, lately they've been changed, but historically TIFs have been an infrastructure transportation strategy. And we're asking that really, and Prosper Portland has really put forward a strategy that says, no, housing will be funded first, and that money may come from transportation. That's a significant shift, and whether or not you fund it that way is going to depend on whether the strategy kind of moves out of the box and whether it's implemented. Funding to fund the community groups and invest in their long-term championship of this program and them being involved in the decision-making is something that is going to take some funding, not only seed money, I think, but probably long-term money to do. And again, it's funding that has to come from the city council. Funding for non-displacement, anti-displacement activities, that is an activity that the community put forward as a high priority, almost their number one priority. That's something that council recently said, I'm not sure. The community saying that's really what we want in this corridor. We have to fund that to go forward. So our skepticism was, great plan, we love it, we really want to implement it, and we think it's a model, as been said before, for how to do equitable investments in transportation. But it means that not only you, but future councils have to live up to the commitment down the road so that you capitalize the investments that you make today 10 years from now. And who's on council and do they remember that their job 10 years from now is to capitalize the early investments that are made now to keep the affordable housing in the affordable housing portfolio. And so it's not only what you're going to do early on, but are we going to long-term make those investments that hold that portfolio together? And so as the PSC, we're hoping that, you know, you make the investments, that you do make the commitments, and because it's a strong group that has come before you today, before me today, and really expressed that transportation is an equitable development for all of us, and just not for the people that have wealth. And we have a great plan to show that, and the PSC is supportive in implementing a plan like that, the one today. Thank you.
Can I just make one? Commissioner Fish. So, Andre, appreciate you being here back-to-back days, sharing your wisdom and a historical perspective. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't on the council when it adopted the Albina plan, but I think that's the elephant in the room. That's the cautionary tale that we're talking about. And it was a lengthy, complicated plan with lots of commitments signed by a who's who that was superseded by a light rail plan, and then market forces took over in ways that were both foreseeable and unforeseeable. So I want to make sure that I understand from your point of view how history can be different here. First of all, we are specifically addressing an equitable housing strategy, anticipating there will be market disruptions that displace and gentrify. So that's a plus. Two, it isn't a phone book thick plan with mind-numbing complexity. There are very specific components here that are going to be fairly straightforward for us to determine. Mm-hmm. Third, you're saying to us, don't go forward unless you're going to fund it. Don't do a bait and switch. And yes. Fourth, I think the one area, though, that I would caution us is if we learn from history, keep the plan relatively straightforward, develop an equitable housing strategy, agree to fund it in a way up front that is ironclad, so it doesn't, you know, there's no new, you know, policy choice that comes along the way light rail did in Northeast, yeah. in Northeast Portland. Even when we do all that, I still think we have to be cognizant of the fact that we can't fully predict market forces. And so I hear you loud and clear about the lessons of history. Keep it simple. Don't move forward unless you're going to fund it. The only thing I would just caution us is, despite all of our best intentions, there could be market forces beyond our control, where at some point someone says, "Boy, if we'd only done a little more," and the like. Well, we don't know where that's going to land, but we can make the commitment as a council to fund it at an agreed upon level with the community, understanding that it still may not be sufficient. Is that a fair comment?
That was a fair comment. And I would add, the thing that it gives me hope, I have probably been critical of this because of all the issues you listed out and listed in here, but is that the community is really part of the future of this. They've endorsed, they want to be on the ground working to produce that future and talk about their housing and how does it work and maybe owners and a lot of different things than before. And the other significant thing is TriMet, and you heard Dave say it, they're leaning in around affordable housing. That's significant. I mean, TriMet has one goal: build a train, get people on it, let's get going. And they get it. They're saying, hey, we need affordable housing to be a successful agency. And so you have partners. It's not just the city of Portland. You have Tigard and Metro and a lot of people that are kind of getting on board with you. So the market forces are going to come no matter. You can't predict or stop those. But with all the partners, I think you've got a better strategy about how to address them. And it's just not the city of Portland. So I'm encouraged, but I wanted, you know, our letter is offering those cautions from that standpoint.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your being here. Commissioner Fritz.
So I appreciate your sentiment, and yes, this does need to be funded if it's going to be done right. When I read your letters, the Planning and Sustainability Commission's letter several weeks ago, my first thought was this is a boatload of money. And we, a few months ago, heard about the outer division strategy and the need for housing and investment there to prevent displacement even for bus rapid transit, which I think we all agree is probably less attractive than light rail. And yet we didn't collectively say, by gosh, we have to do this. So did the Planning and Sustainability Commission discuss what would be the trade-offs in putting millions of dollars of general fund into this project versus continuing to fund the other things that general fund does?
Yes. Implicit in this is that council not lose sight of East Portland division and that housing needs in the rest of the in Portland. So it's do this, but don't stop or say it's a trade-off between if you do this, we don't invest in East Portland, we don't invest in division. We know there's a limited pot of money, but it's you have to do everything, because if you only do this, what happens to East Portland? What happens to division? And so are we just moving the players around? And so we are saying keep your eye on the ball in the other areas also.
Yeah, the challenge is we don't have an infinite amount of money. And so if we don't have more general fund, there has to be trade-offs. And so I guess I can't promise to you that, yes, I will do what the Planning Commission suggested, because it's always going to be what's available and what's the most crucial place to invest it. And also, I do think we need to invest in this, because unlike the Orange Line that I was on the council for, where we knew this was coming and we didn't do what's called for here, and lo and behold, we again have displacements and lack of affordable housing.
Yeah.
So let's learn from the recent past as well as the far past.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Carla, how many people do we have signed up for public testimony?
I show three.
Three very patient people. All right. So 3 minutes each, name for the record. And you know the drill. The microphones slide around about 6 inches is right. 30 seconds before your time is up, the yellow light will flash. And when your time is up, the red light will flash.
I show John Gibbon, Amina Omar, and Layla Omar.
Very good. Sir, why don't you go ahead and start for us? Thank you for being here.
My name is John Gibbon. I'm speaking on my own behalf today. I am first vice president of Sweeney after a long year as president of Sweeney. And the person designated to follow the Southwest Corridor Project for Sweeney. And I guess I would take it from another skeptical point of view. I understand and appreciate what Commissioner Fish or Fritz has said about our shared Southwest area. We've got a lot of lack of infrastructure. We've got stormwater issues that are huge in relationship to the area that I'm most familiar with, where I got on TriMet today to ride downtown here at the crossroads. There's still a big issue to be decided there. And when I spoke to TriMet last week and urged them to support the preferred line, I also told them that, you know, we're glad you're coming to the crossroads, but understand the crossroads is going to be probably the greatest technical challenge, geographic challenge they've ever put in their light rail system. And the alternatives we have right now are not great alternatives. TriMet last week did decide to back off a little bit on their support for the Taylor's Ferry alternative and make it still on the table, but not their preferred alternative for crossing at the crossroads. That just enhanced my statement to them that they needed to do a stakeholders committee with the neighborhoods and with all the communities that you've heard from today on that issue, because we, you know, walking here today, I walked a mile to get to the Crossroads Transit Station. I walked probably a quarter of that, maybe, on streets with sidewalks. And that's only sidewalks on one side of the street. And the rest of it was either on private paths or on some streets that are very wide and very usable for walking. But there are limits in Southwest that people need to understand. As I guess I'll finish with one story. Former Mayor Hales, when he was up there talking about the crossroads with me when he was running 5 years ago now, I guess, was patting himself on the back because he got a detention pond put in front of one of the businesses, the motel in the crossroads area. And he said that was one of the first times the city of Portland ever put in a detention pond. And those are the kind of things that we need more of up there to make this project work. And so we're going to have some big budget issues to face in this. Still, you should do this because it gives us some more resources to address those issues with. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your being here. Welcome. And the microphones move too. They just slide around. There you go.
Hi, my name is Layla Omar.
Can you make it a little closer? You keep it about 6 inches away, a little bit further down.
Oh.
There we go. Okay.
There you go. Thank you.
Sorry. Okay. Hi, my name is Layla Omar. I've been living in Portland about I think 17 years. Originally from Africa to Dallas, Dallas to Minnesota, Minnesota to Portland. It was Southwest Portland. We never moved from Southwest Portland. And we really appreciated you guys for considering helping us with low-income housing in Southwest Portland. We have problems also in Southwest Portland with the management of the apartment that my mom used to live at, which was it's called Lordell apartment, and that we lived there for about maybe 10 years, but the manager would keep keep threatening my mom and my other people that lived there for, like, there's certain time that people could come, and there's certain places that, certain ways that we could walk, or certain ways we can talk, because of our culture, or because the certain way how we can cook, the certain way, the smell, and all that stuff, which was, I thought it was racist, very racist, because we don't tell anybody to. It's our culture. We cannot leave our culture, the way we cook, the way we eat, the way we talk. And one of the accidents that happened was one of the older senior people that lived in those apartments. He was walking, going to the mosque. He was across the street from Lauderdale apartment. He sunk, because there was no stop. They didn't have a stop sign, and you have to walk across the street without. They don't have the thing. So it was in the middle. It was in the middle, like around 7. It was dark, and so a car hit him. He got hit by a car. We was going toward the mosque. So they took him to the hospital. So everybody heard in our neighborhood, in our community, that he got in a car. So they were come visit him in the middle of the night, in the daytime and nighttime. So the manager thought that there's people living in this apartment. More than there were, who's her, him, and her, him and his wife, but the manager thought there was a lot of people because there were a lot of people coming back in and out. That she thought that there were people living. They were thought asking the tenant who lives there and all that. She just assumed that a lot of people live there, and she gave 72 hour notice to get evicted because there were people coming back and forth. And then they got a lawyer, so it was really challenging. We have, especially those apartments, we have really challenging landlords in those apartments. And if you guys trying to invest in to buy a building or an area, I think that place would be very convenient, very good for our community, because our community, we go to Markham. I went to high school, Wilson High School, and I graduated at PCC for associate. And it's really important if we get those area apartments, complex, I really appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Amin again. I have a similar story to what Leila just said in the same complex. My cousin, who just moved from Kenya to Portland 2 years ago, it was his first year living in that apartment. So what had happened is their stove top was not working well, so they called the maintenance to the manager, and then the manager sent the maintenance. But at the same time, the manager came along with the maintenance and then caught the wife cooking, took a pictures with her knowledge, with her consent, you know, without telling her, like asking her, is that okay if I take a picture? So she just took pictures while she was cooking and took those photos to the landlord and told the landlord the reason why her stove is not working because she cooks a lot. So, I didn't understand the whole thing, why she did that. But she was saying that that's the reason these people, they cook a lot, and these people have a lot of families based on our culture, like Leila was saying. So, and it seems like there's more people, Somali people live in that community. It's called Ludan apartment. So, because it's close to Markham School and it's close to the mosque, it's very convenient for a lot of folks in our area, especially like the older men, who could just walk to the mosque. Well, he doesn't drive. Like my cousin, like I was saying, my cousin who got put through that, he got 72-hour notice to get evicted from his apartment. And he was just brand new to this country. He didn't speak English or anything. And he didn't have any support, like any money. So we were trying to help him out. And then finally, I think the owner of the place just kind of came through and looked at the house and looked at the place. And he's like, this place is maintained. It's really well taken care of, so he didn't understand the whole thing of what they're trying to do. So the two people, the office got fired right away, immediately. But my cousin still lives there in that apartment, and that's the best place to be, but I think. Well, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you for sharing today.
You'll be interested to know that the Bureau of Transportation has plans to improve Capitol Highway, and I'm hoping put lights on the crossing between the mosque.
Because it has been so many incidents on that area where, well, my kids go to the madrasa over there at the mosque. So I'm kind of afraid sometimes when they walk through that cross, that little, I don't know if you're familiar with that area. Sometimes the car won't even stop, even though there's a stop sign.
Well, I think they're going to just
go through, and I have experienced that myself personally.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's dangerous when they have those crosswalks without the light. So there is a plan to do many more improvements. So I'm glad that you live there.
Yeah.
Some of that naturally occurring affordable housing along the Capitol Highway corridor, if you travel it very often like I have for years, you'll know that they're some of the biggest contributors to some of the stormwater problems we have along there. Some of the maintenance that hasn't been done on those buildings has been on their storm drainage systems, and it contributes to the problems we're dealing with in that area. So,
thank you.
Thank you all three of you.
Carla, was there anybody else signed up?
That's all who signed up.
Very good. Colleagues, did you have more questions for staff, or should we go right to the roll? All right. Carla, please call the roll on the resolution.
Fritz.
I very much appreciate all the work that's gone into this, all the partnerships. Thank you very, very much, and particularly the partnerships with the community. Thank you for taking the time to be here. I know you're going to keep involved because it's our neighborhood and that you want it to develop and be a prosperous place for everybody who lives and works near there. I do feel slightly more comfortable about the working part and the commercial, and I look forward to being involved in the discussions about how to keep the small businesses prosperous there and to at what I can do as a neighbor of this area. Thank you, everybody. Aye.
Fish.
Well, it's a great hearing, and thanks to everybody for taking time to join us and to spend the afternoon with us. This is a solid framework. It's going to take new resources to fund out what we want to do, which is one of the reasons that I'm spending, along with a number of people in this room, a lot of time trying to shepherd both measures 102 and 26199 to a successful conclusion. The regional housing bond, if adopted by the voters, would include over $250 million in additional resources in Multnomah County, which would be very useful as we try to finance the Southwest Corridor Plan. I appreciate that we're trying to learn from the mistakes of the past, and I appreciate those who have come forward to share their stories to remind us that we can repeat the mistakes of the past unless we're very careful. And I hope to be on this council for a long time and long enough so that we can celebrate some wins of doing things differently and really getting this transportation and affordable housing nexus right. Because as was earlier noted, the principal cost that households are now incurring is a rent plus transportation cost. And I'm encouraged by the work that's been done, and I look forward to future presentations. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I want to thank everybody who testified today, and I want to thank all of our partners, of course. I particularly want to thank TriMet for working collaboratively with Planning and Sustainability and the Housing Bureau and Prosper Portland on really looking at how we support the dual goals of both housing and transportation. I know a lot of effort went into bringing this forward together, and I look forward to seeing the final agreement between the city and TriMet sometime next week. While Portland and our partners work very diligently to prevent displacement together, we make sure that we're building the affordable housing and the commercial space to help Portlanders thrive. And last but not least, I just want to say that this is a very important initiative because it intentionally brings the transportation and the workforce and affordable housing piece together. And as Commissioner Fish noted, there are also issues on the November ballot that could help further this process. And I would encourage people as they look at their ballots to do so very carefully with the intention of supporting any measure that could help us move forward with this affordable housing, frankly, obligation. So thank you all. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted, and we are adjourned.